Hi, I'm Natalie Gochner. You are listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center, which is so important these days, but I have on the political left, Councilwoman Shireen Gorbani. Hi, Shireen.
Hi, and hey to the listeners.
And on the political right, Senator Dan McKay.
Good morning, everybody. We're excited to be here with you.
Yeah, let's make this a lively program, and I'm hoping that the two other co-hosts will help me in this first segment. I want to talk about the president-elect transition. I want to talk about the Republican Party 2.0 and how the media is reacting to all this. So let's start with the president-elect's transition. Shireen, I'll go to you first. The president-elect is starting to roll those picks out, and they're looking to be diverse, a lot of women. I'd love to hear what one stood out for you. For me, it's Janet Yellen, which is still yet to be formalized, but to have a woman serving as Secretary of Treasury with her background, she's someone who knows Utah, comes from the West. A lot of people in Utah know her, so I'm really excited about that potential selection. What are you seeing, Shireen?
Yes, I think this is a real change, certainly from what we were seeing in the Trump administration. And I'm excited to see a number of names on this list and a couple of new roles. I think Alejandro Mayorkas is an interesting pick for the Department of Homeland Security. He would be the first Latino and first immigrant to hold this post. I think that's a real change in terms of the overall tone of what the Department of Homeland Security has been doing and where we're going. And I also think the pick of John Kerry to be a special envoy on climate is absolutely critical. I know that Dan kind of threw out last episode about the warnings and apprehension some on the right have about the Green New Deal. But I started really doing a deeper dive into just the cost of the environmental crises that we are facing. The wildfires in California, for example, were conservatively $10 billion. So we really have to understand that our national security, our financial status, everything about us as a country is really tied to what's happening with our environment. And I think that's an interesting pick and an interesting addition.
Yeah. Dan, it's interesting. You know that as these picks roll out, there's nothing about them that is unintentional. So I'm certain that the Kerry climate announcement was intentionally done early to kind of calm the base as some other picks are coming that might not be as progressive, perhaps, as the left wing of the Democratic Party thinks. What are you seeing in terms of a potential Republican selection?
Well, I mean, that's a great question in and of itself. I mean, if there is a Republican in this administration, it will be something in a nominal position. And I'm not going to name any positions so the people are mad at me about which position I think is nominal. But there are certainly some nominal positions that, you know, where someone could serve and honestly would be out of sight, out of mind. I mean, think about Ben Carson at HUD this last, you know, the last 4 years, like where really has been, you know. It's a pretty quiet position, you know, it's a lot of day-to-day administrative tasks. So in that ways, I think that's, you know, it's something like that. The funny thing that and this is, you know, we talked about this a few months ago, like if President Biden, or, you know, if Biden became president, you know, I was talking about the difficulty that the progressive wing of the party is going to have as, you know, Biden rolls out a bunch of the same character from the Obama administration to serve in important positions. And, you know, appointing John Kerry as your, you know, climate person, claiming that he's new blood on the issue is a little bit interesting because, well, I guess maybe that there's going to be a climate, you know, special envoy or whatever. That's a thing. But it's the same old guard from the Democratic Party, and they're just rolling out the formers. And I think that everybody that was hoping to see some new faces doing some things, you're going to see a few, but for the most part, it's going to be retreads of the Democratic Party.
Dan, here's a quick follow-up question for you, though. If Senator Romney were offered a position like Secretary of Commerce, Secretary of Energy, that will be an exciting one in these times, U.S. Trade Representative, Small Business Administrator, would he do it?
I think it would be a total mistake for him. That's my opinion. But if he entertains the idea and spends some time looking at it or that kind of thing, and it becomes like a public thing, what it will tell you is what I'm starting to hear is that he may not run for re-election. And so if that's the trajectory he takes instead as a position in the administration, and, you know, we get a new U.S. senator here in Utah, let that melee begin. But the more entertaining part would be, I personally, from a political standpoint, don't think that it's a good move for Mitt Romney to serve in the Biden administration, but I could be wrong. I wouldn't do it.
Shireen, you've mentioned that you want Senator Romney to stay right where he is because you like some of the positions he's taken. What would you put out there that would potentially, from the left, but show a more bipartisan sort of consensus government? Who would you, what department or what person would you see coming on board that would give people in the political middle like me the comfort to know that this isn't just, you know, Clinton 2.0 or Obama 2.0?
So, you know, it's an interesting question because I think often the anxieties that I hear or the issues that I hear brought forward are those that are, you know, most closely tied to economic choices and economic policies. So it seems like that would be a place where that bridge could maybe bring people to a place where, you know, moderates or certainly, you know, people, the many people on the right who did vote for Joe Biden. I guess I think that the thing that is concerning to me about that is what does this look like if we continue to have just a deeply dysfunctional Senate? How do we really get things done? What are the people that we're going to need in places and positions of power to actually move forward some really important policy choices? It all feels very, as long as we have those two seats in Georgia unsettled, it feels, all of this feels really hard to understand and predict. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. If the nation isn't focused on Georgia yet, Shireen, that will change over the next few weeks. It might even ruin Christmas. I mean, that's what I'm starting to hear from people, is that those two races are going to just take over the nation.
Really interesting. Shifting to the Republican Party and what's next, I heard Peggy Noonan on an interview say that Biden can't heal us, but he can calm us. And I kind of liked that. And so the other thing I'm looking for calming us is I'd like to see a Republican Party start to rebuild itself after these sort of tumultuous, almost nightmarish-like years, at least for conservatives like me who really value leadership at the top. Dan, I know you don't follow that exactly, but I'd love to hear your thoughts on what you would want to see if the Republican Party is starting to recapture, you know, some of its former glory as a conservative, intellectual, you know, place to be.
Well, first of all, it's pretty interesting to hear Peggy Noonan like channeling the phrase that I've heard referred to for Chinese food, right? Like, It makes you feel good at first, but it never fills you up for the long term. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So what, I mean, that's an interesting, you know, if you start to think about how that applies to the president-elect Joe Biden, that's not a positive thing, by the way, for the party. If you're looking at a guy who you're hoping will go two terms. And so you know, that's an issue. One, the other part of this, when I think about the future of the Republican Party, is I'm hoping, and I think you're seeing this really in the voting patterns. I mean, 50% of the Hispanic population supported President Trump. And you see that more and more of working America was supporting Donald Trump. And you almost see this kind of flip where you've got the country clubbers who, you know, have their rules and, you know, they like for their president to look and act a certain way. Those guys are looking for someone like Joe Biden who will calm everyone, right? And then you've got the working class of America who is really looking for someone who's going to bring them on board to economic expansion. And so I really hope that the Republican Party will continue to grow into this representing middle America and representing the working class of America, one. And that, two, we'll be focused more on providing opportunities, not necessarily be focused on trying to guarantee outcomes. And that line from the vice presidential debate from Mike Pence, to me, has been the overarching benefit that I'm hoping that the Republican Party will be able to stand on in the future, because that is America. Regardless of where people want to take the country, America is opportunities. It is not land of guarantees. And it's rough and tumble, and there is no way to get around that. And so I just hope that's where I want the Republican Party. And I'll just throw a pitch in for liberty and freedom because, you know, that's my own personal bent.
Yeah. Shireen, love to hear your response.
Yeah, also a fan of liberty and freedom here. I think that there's a real question about what the future of the Republican Party looks like. And this is a conversation we've had many times, even, I think, off of off air. But I don't see it as a party that's full of ideas. And I think that we have some really big ideas or really big issues that need big ideas. And one that I think we could start to focus on that would be much better or much more important, I think, could be really looking at how we solve the issues for the 40 million Americans who are living in poverty. There are some really, I think, innovative ways that we could come together across party lines to really address poverty, but it's not something that I've seen as a real priority. And in fact, some of the economic policies that have been put in place by the Republican Party are why we have the deep financial divides that we have in this country. So I think there's a real exciting and interesting time here moving forward.
Interesting. I agree with you both. And I just see that we need a Republican Party that can help us make government work again. And that gets down to ideas and compromise and the like. We're going to push our discussion about the media into our next segment. I'm Natalie Gochner in the Political Center with Shireen Gorbani and Dan McKay. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider donating to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
Shireen Gorbani on the left.
Dan McKay on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. We've talked about the president-elect's transition. We've talked about some remaking of the Republican Party. Let's talk media. And Shireen, I'm going to go to you first. You said to me off air that you don't watch a lot of media, whether it's CNN, Fox, MSNBC. But I'll just say from my standpoint that I've typically been a CNN watcher because I always thought that that was in the productive middle and Fox to the right, MSNBC to the left. But through this cycle, it felt to me like CNN was so far left. And so I started to lose a media home, got a little uncomfortable. The real question is, what are they all going to do when in a post-Trump world?
Yeah.
Shireen?
It's a good question. I'm a person who really consumes a lot of, I would say, news, politics, podcasts. I read our local papers. And I think that's one of the things that I'm really interested in is as we see the conglomerations buying up local newspapers and seeing really particular media narratives repeated at the local level, we're really losing that, I think, rich and important work that needs to happen on the ground in communities. So that's something that I'm a little bit more focused on, but I'm really interested in your take on what is the future of Fox News that I've read is kind of backing away from President Trump. And,
yeah,
you know, what is going to happen on the left, I guess, in terms of these big media stations when we have to actually talk about issues and not just the chaos of the Trump administration?
Yeah. Yeah. Dan, love to hear what your take is on Fox. I mean, immediately after it was clear that the president was not going to win this, they started to make their pivot, didn't they?
They turned quick. It's interesting, though, that they were so, like, you know, they seemed to know it seemed before everybody else, especially the president, before, you know, how the election might turn out. The question is going to be for the future of the media is how do they stay relevant in a calm presidency, right? You know, in the past, there are wars, there are, you know, world events and those kinds of things. And that's what we used to talk about on the news. Well, we don't talk about those things anymore. We talk about some, you know, thing that the media takes issue with that Donald Trump has said or done about Twitter from the day before. And so what happens if Joe Biden doesn't use Twitter? What happens if, you know, all of the usual news stream things and that type of source dries up? I think you're going to see a consolidation in the news business. And I think there's going to be, you know, a real evaporation of diversity, I guess, from news and opinion. And so I honestly, it will be nice to have the calm, like you mentioned earlier in the show. But I think there will also be a little bit of a, you know, just a desert of just stuff happening around the president. And what that may mean is that we'll then focus on the policies of the left and the Democrats, which I think is going to win us a presidency in 2024. So we have that going for us.
Mm. You know, I just have to say, I miss the day, and you two are both younger than I am, but I miss the day when you used to have the evening news, and it was news, and there wasn't so much opinion rolled up in it. I have to keep reminding my children that it hasn't always been this way. And, you know, so much of what we get, because we have full-time, you know, 24/7, you know, production on these channels, they give so much opinion that it's hard to find the news. And I define news, right, as the obligation to report both sides of a topic. We've lost a lot of that really hard. Mm-hmm. Shireen, do you want to say anything more there? If not, I want to just talk for a minute about the juxtaposition of our Senator Lee and Senator Romney. Some interesting dynamics there. Lee, the senior senator, Romney, the junior. Lee, the younger, Romney, older. Lee, you know, so in the Trump camp, Romney in the basically the anti-Trump camp. We have two canceling senators out there, Shireen.
Yeah, I think what Mike Lee's been doing over these last couple of weeks is really troubling. He not only looked the other way, which many Republicans did, as Trump really tried to silence voters, spread lies, and really frayed at the edges of our Democratic Republic, but he leaned into it. And I think that we all need to remember at this moment, Natalie, you mentioned last week that a transition is really the weakest period of a government, that he decided to lean into these narratives of lies. And it is not appropriate. It's not becoming of a senator. And I'm really grateful for Romney's voice in all of this. And I think Lee should be held accountable.
Mm. Dan from the right.
So I don't know what Shireen's talking about. I got to be honest. I listened to that and I said, that doesn't ring true. As I think about the last 2 weeks, you know, what the president, Donald Trump, was saying and what was going on in voter booths were unsubstantiated claims, and you have these issues coming in from all over the country, and they're, you know, probably Trump supporters or sympathists, or maybe they're just neutral and they feel like there were concerns over their voting deal, over how voting was conducted. All those claims, you know, they kind of are working their way out, and everybody's seeing that they weren't the issues they could have been or might have been. And as a result, you know, things are kind of transitioning to normal and slowing, you know, down. You see the sun setting on the Trump administration and you see, you know, the sun start to rise on the Biden administration. But I don't see that the country's frayed at the edges any more than, you know, any more than I see social demonstrations or social protesters tearing America apart either. What I see is you have issues, they make news, and then they go away just like they naturally should. And if you get outside of the 15-minute news cycle for just a second and just peer to the horizon, you see that most of this stuff is just noise and clamor. The presidential transition is going to happen just like we knew it would. And at the end of the day, America's going to move forward from this. We always do. And Senator Lee is a great senator. Senator Romney is a great senator. And if you look at the two of them and their divergent opinions about the way things are, I think that really represents the heart and soul of Utah. We are divided as a state on what to do about the Trump administration and how to deal with it. You have, you know, and so I don't think you can look at, you know, the division and not see that there really is an indication that Utah is actually divided about how the Trump administration is going to be viewed in the future. And that's just my take. I personally, if I look at it, I probably am more in line with Senator Lee and think that at the end of the day that, you know, you ferret out all the claims and then you move on. And I think Senator Lee is ready to do that as well.
The Trump administration has sent out and then had to back away from lawyers saying very damaging things that just simply were not true, unspooling these conspiracy theories that were absolutely irresponsible. And unfortunately, we have a large number of Republicans in this country that believe that Joe Biden has not been legitimately elected. That is reinforced by what Lee has been doing.
Go back 20 years ago, though, Shireen, when both of us were, you know, younger. Those types of things existed. They were still issues. But see, the difference is the news cycle was so much longer that you could actually ferret out and get to the truth of those things before they became widespread.
I don't need a time machine to know this is wrong.
Today, it's totally different. If you send something out and put it on social media, it moves faster than it can be controlled, and you don't know whether or not it's legitimate yet. And so I don't think, at least in my opinion, I think this is just a new type of cycle that we're going to be seeing more and more, that things are going to move really quick. And we're just going to have to get used to like being back and forth on it.
I'll just say from the political middle that there is a polarized nation, a polarized state, and it seems like the only thing we agree on is that we're polarized. Hey, Shireen, you have a large social media following. You have said that we want to talk about homeless services in the state of Utah on the program. I'm just going to kind of turn the mic over to you. Hit me with some questions. Dan can provide color commentary. Let's do this quickly. But Gardner Institute put out a report on homeless service governance, and I know you have an interest in it.
Yes, I do. So, and I think it's especially pressing on my mind, and I know on many in our community, as we see, you know, the temperatures just dip into dangerous levels for individuals who are unhoused. And I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about what your study proposed and what how that came to be.
Yeah. You know, the best way to say it is that, you know, you need governance to do great policies. And right now, governance in homeless services in our state is confusing. There's no statewide funding plan or comprehensive budget. So we have this complex and inefficient decision-making framework. So we, with the help of some incredible providers, local government leaders, representatives of the House and Senate, the executive branch, worked all summer to come up with a really thoughtful leadership and coordination structure. And the main thing that we do is we recommend the state appoint a homeless services officer, someone who works on this every day, and give that homeless service officer a Utah Homeless Council that's very well represented, with balancing urban, rural, state, local, you know, all of the things you want to balance, legislative, executive, and let them go to work to provide better governance for this really important need in our state.
Yeah. Yeah. I was excited to read it. And I was also excited to see this last over those last few days. The Deseret News came out with two pieces in depth looking at some of the solutions that we've seen in other places, a tiny home community in Austin, and also a tent community that was a transitional place with supportive services to move people out of living in tents as quickly as possible. This is an issue I'm passionate about for many reasons, but it's something that's come into sharper focus, certainly in my experience over the last couple of years on the council. And going out for the point in time count every January, we deploy people all over the state to go and count the individuals who are experiencing homelessness, get a sense for, you know, what they've been through and where they're from. And that was something that was so interesting to me. It's individuals, when I went out three mornings this last January, from Kaysville, from West Jordan, from Salt Lake City, people from all over the state. So this is a regional problem. And I'm particularly passionate about how we're going to find and bring together solutions for children. In the first 6 months of 2020, 936 children aged six and under experienced homelessness. The thing about these problems is that they are in some ways small. And if we got really focused on it, we could make a huge impact on an issue that has ripple effects across our community and really devastating effects for children in particular. So it's something I'm excited about. I think the governance structure is really important. Figuring out the philanthropic element of it is very important. And then combining that with housing, transitional housing, the need for housing that we have, and also the need for workforce development. So I'm excited about this. I do have hope that we can do better. And it's actually a problem that we could get a lot further down the road in meeting the need that we have in our community.
Mm-hmm. Dan, all of this builds on the work that's already been done in our state to focus homelessness more on prevention and solutions than just sheltering people. But all of this is going to cost more money. Is the state prepared for that, do you think?
Well, I'm not sure of the answer on that. As you look at the budget from this upcoming year, this is going to be a tight budget year. Absent some new CARES Act funding or some other changes, this is going to be a tight budget year. So it will compete with other priorities. That said, it is important for everyone to realize that I think transitioning to this ground up approach is going to be and is going to produce results in a better way, in a more meaningful way. And I think it will be important for the state really to continue from an outside role, really from a funding perspective and not necessarily from a management role, because that's the one thing I think we've kind of let this charge down. So,
Yeah. Thanks for the comments on that. Quickly, I'd want to hear from both of you. What are you grateful for? What are your plans for Thanksgiving? Dan?
So I am grateful for so much, but we have so little time. I just want to say I am thankful for this show. I mean, it is great to get feedback. It's great to be talking through issues. And I'm grateful for your friendship specifically. And I'm grateful for the listeners, even the ones who send me hate mail.
Great. Shireen, what are you grateful for? What are your plans for Thanksgiving?
You know, I am grateful for our healthcare workers. I know that they're in a really tough position this week, and I am planning to basically just stay home. It's just going to be us. I'm working on tiling a bathroom.
That's great. I'm going to express gratitude for my parents. Both passed away several years ago, but I feel their presence every day. Hey, really wonderful to be with you all. Happy Thanksgiving to our listeners. Shireen Gourbani on the left, Dan McKay on the right. The program's produced by Anthony Scoma. Thanks, everybody, and happy Thanksgiving.